And that's it. We good. How's it going, man?
What's up, buddy? Good to be here. Good to see you, man. How you doing?
Nicky Rod, the beast. I was just telling you in off, like, every week I got a message from someone, like, oh, you got to bring Nicky Rod to the show. We've been talking for a few weeks. I'm glad we make it work. How's everything going? How's training? Getting ready?
Good,
for,
man.
For what? Any fights coming up?
Yeah, no fights or matches get coming up right now. But you know, I'm staying ready. I'm in shape. I train every day, and I'm ready. I know Flo's got Who's Number One coming up. Maybe we're in talks right now. Maybe I hop on there. But I don't have anything signed. But I'm in shape, man. You know, still training, still getting ready. I have ADCC on my mind. You know what I mean? That's my long term goal. So everything in between is just practice for now. I'm just preparation for that.
Yeah, and we kind of like. Lucky that all this shit's happening this year, so it should not bother the ADCC schedule for next year, right?
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it's a weird time, coronavirus and everything, but I think COVID's going to be fine, especially because it's in Vegas, and once people get a couple of drinks in them, they tend to forget about, you know, whatever quarantine is, so yeah. I think it's going to be all right.
Yeah. So for people who don't know, if you live it under a rock and you don't know, Nicky Rod got the silver medal at ADCC last year, right?
Yeah. So I with about a year and a half of training, I ended up taking second ADCC.
That's fucking crazy.
Yeah. So I took third in the West Coast, in the East Coast trials. ADCC East Coast trials was 6 months of training. I took first in the ADCC West Coast trials. With 8 months of training, securing my spot in the ADCC World Championships. And then, you know, I just been training at Henzo's with the Dan Hurd Death Squad ever since. And about a year and a half into my training, you know, I go to ADCC World Championships and have a run pretty much that's unheard of. You know, a lot of guys make a career in ADCC because of one match or, like, you know, one match they win and one match they lose. Like Eddie Bravo, for instance, you know, he had a phenomenal match at ADCC. And that, not that he, you know, that he won against one of the Gracies, but, you know, he lost, but he still had a tough match against him, you know. Yep. And so just put it in perspective for y'all, he made a career, pretty much a career off of that match that he lost. I won three matches like that in a row. So
crazy, right?
So super crazy. Against Ali, which is a humongous person. I mean, he's 260 pounds and just a behemoth of a man. And then I go against Orlando Sanchez, which is another 300-pound plus.
And if that's not tough enough, then you got Cyborg.
Exactly. Got Cyborg after, yeah. ADCC vet, ADCC champ, and, you know, all-around badass. Guy knows what he's doing on the mat. So, yeah, I was definitely lucky. I couldn't have done it without the squad that I had. You know, training at Dan Hurd Death Squad and training with Henzo's, and then training at NJRTC as well, you know, getting a lot of my wrestling from there.
Yeah.
So I think the diversity in my training, that I wasn't just doing jiu-jitsu, that I was continuing to wrestle and evolve in my wrestling, really helped me. Because honestly, ADCC, yeah, it's a submission tournament, but it starts off on the feet. You got to get down to the mat.
Yes.
If you don't know how to get your opponent down on the mat, then, you know, you're gonna have an issue there. So I felt like with a short period of time, I had such success because not only was I training obviously with the best in the world in wrestling and jiu-jitsu, but I was soaking up their knowledge, and, you know, I was strategically game planning. So I said per match, you know, if this guy stands with me, my job's getting nice and tired, and then, you know, eventually get some points and get him down to the mat. And if they pull guard, I was like, all right, I'm going to put the pace on them, knee cut pass and try my best to take the back. And I was fortunate to have the success that I did. Obviously, you know, I went into that gold medal, but I fell short in the finals. But, you know, I'm young. I'm 24 now. Or I'm almost 24.
That's pretty good for your first ADCC too, right?
Yeah. Pretty good. Yeah, so I fell short in the finals. And, you know, in the finals, I pretty much, like, I had a second where I had a mental mishap. Pretty much, like, when at the beginning, I want to say maybe a minute or two in the ADCC finals against Conan Duarte, right? I was able to body lock pass him to his back, right? And typically, when I get to somebody's back, I secure the position, get my both my hooks in, get my figure four, and then I go for the submission. Yeah. I think I let the maybe just the pressure or the anxiety of ADCC or of me being in the finals.
The whole moment thing, like, yeah. Say, holy shit, I'm here, right?
Yeah, I'm here, and I'm like, I'm in the back, and all I have in my mind is like, I don't give a fuck about this punch. I just want to sub this guy, you know. So as soon as I get to the back, I go directly for the neck. And it really messed me up because I wasn't controlling him positionally. Like I had his back, I had like a hook in, and I was just going for the choke. And you know, he was able to slip out, and I was like, in that moment, I was like, if I didn't go for the choke, I just took my time, you know, because jiu-jitsu is a slow sport, it's a slow paced sport.
Exactly.
Yeah, you can't. I mean, you can explode and stuff, but honestly, guys that just nonstop explode, they usually just fucking get tired and lose, you know.
Yeah.
So you have to invest your time wisely in a match, and yeah. So pretty much when I got to his back, I went directly for the choke, and I think that definitely messed me up because after that I was like fuck, all right, I gotta get to the back again. And then he ended up came up from bottom, took my back, and then I got out. And we scrambled and whatnot, but yeah, I mean I was definitely pissed I didn't win ADCC, but. No, it kind of showed me where I was because not only did Duarte get my back, but you know, he had my back for like 5 minutes and didn't sub me at all. So said something for my defense, and then at the very end, you know, had like I think I escaped like 30 seconds left, and had a nice little run where I was able to pass the guard and kind of get to his hips a little bit and almost secure some points, but you know, almost don't count. So we'll get there, man. We'll get there
for sure. Tell us about. That journey until you got to Reynolds, because it's pretty awesome. I was reading about it and trying to do a little bit of a homework before we start. You took like little side jobs like Home Depot and shit. And tell us like how did the Renzo Gracie kind of thing fell on this, and we'll take it from there.
So right before I started jiu-jitsu, right, I was working at Home Depot. I was going to community college, and I was bouncing. And I was lifting every day. Uh-huh. So that was like my kind of my schedule back home. And then amongst bouncing, right, it's like we pretty much start talking like at like 2 a.m, you know, in the nightclub. We're like, oh, who's the toughest bouncer here? And there was a couple of guys there that trained jiu-jitsu. And they were like, dude, I could definitely beat you up. I was like, bro, I wrestled in college. Like, there's no way. So I want to say like maybe 2 days after, I went with them to like a local jiu-jitsu place. I don't even remember the name, and showed up, and pretty much the class, it was just the professor and the guys I went with. It was like really just nobody was showing up there. So I was like, all right, we trained, and I pretty much beat all these guys up. Like, I wasn't able to sub anybody, but I like pretty much, you know, I took them down, stayed away from submissions. And then like their professor came out, which is like this guy was like 145 pounds. Mind you, I was 220 at the time. I'm a little bigger now, but he was like 145 pounds. And he just beat me up. Like I took him down, but and the second we got to the ground, I like, tossed a triangle, I tossed the arm bar. I was like, what the fuck is going on?
Then it feels ridiculous, right?
Ridiculous.
My professor is Joan Zeferino. I don't know if you remember him. Mm-hmm. He trains at Hansas too.
Okay.
And he's about that. He like I think he's 170 or something like that. One maybe a little more, like 180. But I'm 280, 260. I'm a big guy too. And it just fucking like when you started, you say that how can something like this happen, right?
Yeah. So I think me getting kind of beat up by, like that by a small guy, I was like, I can never let this happen again. So I want to say maybe like a week or two later, I was saved up a couple bucks to you know, pay for a month of jiu-jitsu, and I ended up going to this place called South Jersey BJJ in Berlin, New Jersey. And it's been fucking history, man. I showed up there, I rolled my first day rolling there was a Wednesday, and it was no-gi day. So I go in there, and pretty much I was able to, you know, take everybody down, stay on top of them. I didn't get subbed at all, but I didn't sub anybody. So The next day I went back, I was like, all right, let's try and sub these people. And all I knew was like a arm bar from like YouTube. So from watching that,
from YouTube.
So from watching that, I pretty much subbed like 3 or 4 guys in the gym with that arm bar. Obviously I'm faster, big, strong guy.
Well, we're not even counting your athleticism. You're a big, strong and fast guy. So that and I think it's funny because Gordon Ryan always make a point, because when you did that run on ADCC last year, you were technically a blue belt, right? Like if you put a gi and a belt around, you're a blue belt. And he was like, "Look at this! This guy's a blue belt," and people will give him shit, and give you shit, saying, "Oh yeah," but he was like this top national wrestler. He was like, "No, he was not. He wrestled, but he was not like a elite wrestler, like everybody keeps saying, right?"
Yeah. Pretty much, like my wrestling is good. You know, like I did okay in high school. You know, I was ranked 7th in state, but I didn't place in states. Then I wrestled Division III NCAA in college for a year. I was ranked 12th going into regionals. I ended up taking 4th in regionals and only top 3 going to nationals. So I fell short there. But not only did I wrestle 1 year in college, I kept training. So like when I went home, I trained at the community college. I went to the high school practices. You know, there's not top level athletes there. But, you know, I was still mentally, I'm learning physically, I'm still going through the motions and doing it. So I kept evolving. So, like, it wasn't like, you know, I left college and I was just, like, getting a job and I was done.
Yeah,
I still had it in my mind. I was like, I need to keep doing this. I need to get better. Because, I don't know, for some reason, I was like, this is going to help me out. Like, I couldn't deal with people being better than me. Like if I was getting taken out of a match, like I just couldn't mentally deal with it. So I knew that I just need to keep training, just because at some point this is going to benefit me. Like I didn't see any downfall to me getting better at wrestling. So I was like, I'm just going to keep training, you know, keep learning. So amongst that, I would definitely say I've jumped levels. Not only, you know, do you go from being kind of a boy, you know, at 18, 19 years old, and you start becoming a man little by little, you know, getting into your early 20s. But, you know, the sense of physicality is starting to grow on me still. And then, you know, just the learning. And then once I hooked up with Reese Humphrey at the NGRTC, my wrestling was just like fucking elevated. You know, the guy, he's so knowledgeable. You know, he's like John Danaher of wrestling. You know, he really knows his shit, helps me out a ton. So I think just doing that, you know, and honestly, in wrestling, it's like everything's short bursts. So everything has to do with being explosive and stuff. So the practices are fucking tough. All those guys that are trying to be Olympic champs, you know what I mean? They're returning NCAA finalists and shit like that. So tough room. And I think all those little things like really, really benefited me in the long run.
For sure. And then you go to that jiu-jitsu school and you start your journey. How did Renzo came to life?
So pretty much when I was training at South Jersey BJJ, it's ran by Steve Bongiorno, but Steve Bongiorno's black belt is Jay Regabuto. So Jay Regabuto invited me to their competition clash at 6 a.m. And I was like, dude, there's no way I'm getting up at 6 a.m. in training. So, you know, he convinced me a little bit. And I was like, even though I didn't want to, I showed up the next morning, trained, and it was like a little bit tougher. So the guys there were from different gyms. So it seemed like everybody kind of met at 6 a.m. We had a couple guys from Ricardo's, a couple guys from Grindhouse BJJ, which is like a MMA school in Philly. And so I didn't have the best success there. I actually got leg locked a couple times and caught in like a couple triangles. And that was like not happening in the normal classes. So I was like, oh, we got to keep going to the 6 a.m. class. So eventually, as I keep going to 6 a.m. class, you know, I start meeting guys from Ricardo, from these other schools.
Ricardo Almeida, right?
Yeah, Almeida, which is a Renzo black belt. Yeah, So as soon as I start rolling with these guys, they invite me up. You know, Jay has a hookup where, you know, he invites me to Renzo's, and then I get to train at Grindhouse in Philly. And so I'm going to these two schools, and then as soon as I start having success there, I get the invite to go to Tom DeBlas's. I go there for a few weeks, and it's kind of like everything kind of happens in order. You know, I have to learn from all these phenomenal, you know, coaches and grapplers. And then finally, you know, I want to say 3 months into training jiu-jitsu, maybe 2 or 3 months into training jiu-jitsu, Jay Regabuto gets me a private with Gordon. So I guess once he feels like, and once I feel like I'm acclimated, like I'm
and
good.
This is 2018?
This is 2018,
Holy shit.
Yeah, 2018 with about 3 months of experience. I'm training at Ricardo's, Stop Jersey to BJJ, and you're cross training a lot in Tom the Blastus. So I'm having much more success learning from these guys and grappling here. So Jay gets me a private with Gordon. I drive, 3 hours up north to New York to get this private. I sit in. I didn't even touch Gordon. He had an uke for me, so he just saw me kind of like drilling with him. And then he was like, "Bro, like you should come to practice tomorrow." So I was like, "All right, like I'll take that." So the next day,
Gordon had doing the training with you, and he was kind of coaching.
Yeah. He was
the same with me too. I was like, yeah. "Oh, all right."
Yeah. So he was helped me out, and he invited me to practice. The next day, I showed up, and I pretty much just went as hard as I could the whole practice. Like, the first round, it's usually, like, 6 minutes. And it was me and Gordon, and we went, like, 25 minutes. John was like, "There's no time limit. We're just going to fucking keep going." So he just beat the shit out of me for, like, 25 minutes. But they invited me back because they just want to see if you're going to break. They want to see, everybody gets tired, but are you going to stop because you're tired, Or are you going to take a round off, or are you just going to keep going? And we went like that 20 minutes for the first round. And then second round, Gordon grabs another partner and I sit on the side. I'm like trying to get a break. And he looks at me. He was like, "If you want to do anything in life, you can't take rounds off." So I was like, "Oh, you bastard. All right." I stood up, grabbed another partner and fucking kept going. And then I think I got another round or so in with him. So I was like deadbeat. This is my first time. I've trained jiu-jitsu a ton, with like Ricardo and Tom the Blastus guys. Yeah, and those guys are really good. And really good MMA fighters as well, like Frank Yeager, Corey Anderson is at Ricardo's as well. But there's a level to like MMA jiu-jitsu, from MMA jiu-jitsu to guys that only train jiu-jitsu.
Oh, yeah.
I was having pretty good success at other places, but when I went to the Blue Basement at Henzo's, I was like, "Man, I can't do anything here." So, after that one practice, they saw that how bad I wanted it. I was just like going as hard as I could. I was killing myself out there. They're like, "Listen, as long as you want to come here and train, you're more than welcome." So I started training. I had some bullshit jobs. I was just trying to make enough money to get gas and stuff like that. And I was lucky enough to like before jiu-jitsu started, I built up my social media a little bit. Like I think I had about 20,000 followers just because I was a fitness model with Wilhelmina, which is a really good agency in New York. And I did a bunch of photo shoots for them, and they got me some attention and stuff. So I had about 20,000 followers. So people already had a little bit of interest, like, "Oh, why is this guy popular? Who's this guy? Good looking kid, what's he doing?" So that definitely added to it. And then it enabled me to sell some stuff on Instagram. Like I was selling shout outs for companies and shit like that, just to make enough money for gas to drive up there. Cause it's a 6 hour round trip that I was making. So three hours there, 3 hours back. It's a long day just for training.
You were living where in South Jersey?
So at the time I was living in Clayton, New Jersey, which is a small town in South Jersey. But now I live in North Bergen. I'm like right next to New York.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it takes me 10 minutes to get to practice. It's perfect. Nice. Yeah. So once they invited me up there, I was like, "All right, we gotta figure out a way to pay for gas to get up there, pay for food, pay for gas." Because I just needed enough money for training. I needed money for food because I'm heavyweight, but I'm a bodybuilder too. I'm lifting every day, so I have to eat a lot of food. So that was an issue, but I think at the time I was able to make it up like maybe twice a week. And then once I won the ADCC West Coast Trials, I was able to kind of – I guess that's when I kind of turned pro as far as jiu-jitsu goes, because I went from getting like, $150 to win a match to like, $500 to close to $1,000 to win a match. And that was like – that was a lot of money for me back then. I was poor as fuck back then.
That's a career that you never thought about having, right?
Exactly.
This jiu-jitsu thing is becoming a fucking way of life, right?
Yeah, exactly. When I started jiu-jitsu, it was like it was more to get in shape for wrestling. But once I started learning about, Gordon and Gary Tonin, and I was like, these guys are making real money doing this. This can be a potential career. Yeah. And I was like, "All right, let me just go all in." I quit the jobs. I quit the school. I was like, I'm just going to train. I'm going to commit to it. And I have a year and a half to this ADCC World Championship. So I was like, I'm going to just give it my all and see how it goes. So that's what I did, man. I fully committed. I got rid of everything, all the distractions in my life. The only thing in my life that mattered was practice and lifting and getting better. So amongst doing that, I I won the West Coast Trials, and then, you know, I'm training at Henzo's, and just the evolution begins, man. And we you know, we start the leg locks, we start creating angles to get to the back, and just different stuff. And it feels like, it seems like everything we do is different. Like a lot of professors and stuff, you know, they have a curriculum that they follow, but we're constantly learning. Like, it's not like we have an outline of what we're gonna do, but like literally every day in practice, we're making new moves up. Like we're pioneering the sport. It's crazy, man.
It's something definitely never seen before. I talked to Renzo's many times about this. We talked about it on the podcast actually too, and I'm friends with Neiman and Hobson and the guys from the Gregor and stuff. And they said nobody ever seen anything like that before. And then they. It's very cool that they fully acknowledge that John Danaher it's like a mastermind on this. Actually, I had a podcast with Neiman yesterday, and he said like John Danaher is kind of his head coach now for his next fight at Bellator, and they just like, and Henzo realizes that too, and they're like, look, we sit down and we kind of like brainstorm stuff, you know, like John brings Henzo's whatever he's doing with the team, and Henzo's gives him his thoughts, and it says it's like a phenom that nobody ever seen happening. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, it's like, it's interesting because John is obviously phenomenal at grappling, but that's not all he does. Like, he watches tons of tape. He's so much knowledge.
It's striking and shit. He knows everything. It's amazing.
Yeah, he knows everything.
People just figure like he's the jiu-jitsu guy, and then you see like, well, he's telling George St. Pierre how to do a takedown and how to do like a, hey, you should use your hook here, and it's like, oh shit, maybe there's something a little more to that, right?
Yeah, he knows everything. I mean, you look at Gary Tonin, look at the success he has in one championships. Yeah. I mean, complete animal. And John's his striking coach, his jiu-jitsu coach, his takedown coach, like. It's all John, and you know, he has a mental capacity to keep learning and keep changing the sport. Like, man, I've never been in a room where you can feel the history being made. Like we're actually making moves up like daily. It's crazy, you know, because a lot of people, they need to watch tape or something to learn things. And you know, we're in a rare place where, like, you know, we're making moves like daily, and it's pretty nuts, man. And it just shows us that, you know, we're on the right path towards success and towards superstardom, man. We're headed to the top. You know, we have guys like Gordon that are considered the no-gi goat, but we have a room full of guys that are you know, trying to get to that level, and you know, within a few years they will be.
Oh yeah, for sure. How is the training with Gordon? Because you were like his main training partner, because, and it helps him so much. You're way bigger than him, right?
Yeah, I got about 20 pounds on Gordon, and training with him, it's a blessing, man, because, you know, obviously if I do anything right, if I have any success with him, it's going to work on everybody
and
in
plus
the world.
He's such a good teacher too, right? I think he kind of like absorb all the stuff that Danaher teach him in the way, and I kind of noticed that on my private with him. He talks slow and
he talks just kind of like
Danaher, right? And he explains so well. I'm a guy who needs the why, you know. So it's not just like, oh, so now your leg goes here, but I like to know why and what happens if my leg doesn't go there, and I don't even need to ask that question, because he's like, oh, now you put your leg here, because if you don't, look what happens. And then he shows, and it's freaking amazing.
That's one thing that John does that most coaches don't do. He teaches us how to teach. So, like, not only are we learning the moves, we're learning why, but we're learning how to relay this information in a very easy and kind of a memorable way for our students and our up-and-comers. Because, like, you know, a lot of guys, like you said, they'll just show you the move, but you don't know why. You don't know how this guy is potentially going to react. You know, we know if we're going to take your back, we know if he's going to roll, we do this. If he stands up, we do this. If he cuts out, we do this. So the purpose behind our movements goes a long way, and it honestly lets your body and mind kind of connect a little bit more, because you're realizing the purpose behind every movement that you're doing, and it just makes it that much easier. And it's a really important thing that a lot of professors, I think, miss out on, is showing their kids how to turn their students how to teach, because you're setting up their future. You know, if you know a lot
but
of
there might be a little bit of a selfishness. You don't you think, like, it's okay, I don't want to fucking teach that guy, because, you know, so listen, some people are just like that, man. Like, it's like, yeah, hey, I want to teach him, but to a certain point.
So you know we don't have that in Henzo's. It's a very open book, because we're always making more new moves.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, the stuff that everything I know today, you know, in a week from now, I'm gonna know more. I'm gonna know how to take this back a little bit more. You know, like, Gordon does a really good job of showing us everything that he does and then changing it. So he wants to make his practice harder. Like, that's the thing. If he makes me better, he makes me you know, get to his back, or I'm having success, or he's having issues with me in practice, we're gonna sit down. We're gonna figure out why I'm getting to your back, or why we're having issues in this certain positioning, and that, because in competition everybody's gonna react differently. Yeah. You're gonna need that knowledge to know how to get up and out, or how to hold this guy down. Yeah. So it really helps us evolve as a team, and it just, like, having one person think about a move is okay, but having a group of people think about the same move
sharing,
at the same time.
Right? Say, oh, yes, this is what I did to get here. And the guy's like, oh, okay. Because people don't do that. It's like, I fucking got you. It's like, I'm saving that so I can catch you again tomorrow. Kind of shit,
yep.
Right?
It's true. It's true. And that's the same thing with the DVDs, because a lot of people are like sell DVDs, but they, like, don't want to show it all, because, like, that's all they have. And it's like, we'll give you everything we got in our minds, because
two months from now, it's all different.
It's all different. It's going to be more intuitive, more detail, and all different moves. So, you know, it's the evolution. People stop evolving in the sport, and that's when we take over. And we say, okay, we're going to drive this bus and see how far we can go.
That is unbelievable. Which other tournaments you did? You did a bunch of super fights too, right?
Yeah, so I did a bunch of super fights. I did, like, Fight to Win and stuff. I did IBJJF Worlds when I was a blue belt. I did, you know, a couple Nagas and stuff. But super fights are fun. The issue that I have now is that pretty much I'm at a high level, like, competition wise, but my jiu-jitsu isn't, like, crazy good. So, like, every time I'm learning, or I want to try something in a match, it's against a black belt world champ. You know
oh,
what I mean?
Oh,
it's
yeah, yeah.
So it's like anything I have, like, I can't second guess a move. I have to fully commit and go for it, because I there's no room for mistakes in competition. You know, if you're a blue belt competing against blue belts, it's one thing. But if you're, you know, me, I'm a purple belt now, and every guy I compete against is a black belt, and usually a black belt world champ. So, yeah. It's an issue, you know, as far as you know, trying stuff in competition. But, you know, I try to treat practice, you know, as competition. I have tough training partners, so, like, if I know mentally if I'm having success in the room with a certain move or movement, then as soon as I get on the mat, you know, I'm gonna have the same success.
Yeah, no, for sure. And what you say, it's so real. Is there any people talk a lot about the gi stuff, right? You did some gi, and now it's totally out, right? I joke all the time. I say, those guys don't even put the gi for the picture.
No, so
not even for the picture, you know, that picture holding the belt, stuff like that. Say, not even for that, we'll see gis over there. It's pretty funny.
Yeah, I don't even own a gi, honestly.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so I put a gi on a couple times, you know, and when I first started out, like, stop jersey BJJ. But I never wore a gi at Henzo's. I never see any of our guys wear a gi. I think, you know, a gi definitely has its place. I think it can be fun. But,
no, it's,
you know,
it's a different we got to be honest. It's a different it changes a lot, like, with the grips and all that the gi has to offer, right? So it's a different animal. It's like, if you're competing gi, it's a different type of training, right? Just like the guys from the gi that they take some time off, like Gord's like super rival Felipe. He takes some good time off just training no gi so he can go and compete, and that tells you, like, the difference between the two styles, right?
Yeah, that definitely different. You know, the grips change a lot. People, you know, you don't have all the friction and stuff that you have with the gi, so everything has to be close hands, close fists. So the grips change a lot, and the pace of the match is much
faster. That's what I was
going
to say. It just changed all that stalling that was happening, and I think this is the boom that the jiu-jitsu gave, right? Because, like, all those super fights, it got so entertaining. Like, Eddie Bravo with the EBI thing. It's like, people want to watch the shit again. Because I was talking to, I had, like, Roger Gracie on a podcast. And we were talking. Say, how did jiu-jitsu got so boring, right? Because, like, I fucking love it. And I couldn't sit and watch. Because those, I'm not shitting on IBJJF, but it's just like, sometimes you just watch 2 fucking hours of competition and nothing happens because people are just getting, like, just holding and gripping and shit so they can score points and it's not exciting. And then you see the no-gi jiu-jitsu and people are fucking, you don't have a choice. You got to move.
Got to move, yeah. I mean, you have the ability of being a little bit of an acrobat there. You know, you have like guys like Canoodles doing front flips and back flips. You know, me, I'm cartwheeling in the air and trying to get to your back and stuff. So you have, I think you have more options. Well, it's, I think when you're competing at a faster speed, you have more time for highlight reels. You know, there's a lot of stuff. Like in the ADCC, a lot of things went viral. You know, Gary's scissor takedown to inside heel hook, that went viral. You know, all my takedowns and stuff. That goes, you know, you don't have that if you have a slower paced match. If you're a guy holding on to your gi, you know, those things don't happen. So for the fans, definitely no gi is the way to go. They love it way more. And I think it's exploding the sport, man. I think people seeing, you know, you see somebody wearing like a full karate suit, full gi, and it's like it's not as attractive as two jack dudes with no shirt, just shorts on, trying to fight each other. You know, but seriously, it makes people see. They're like, oh, I want to watch this one more than this one because it just looks better. So I think that plays a part in it. And then obviously having world-class athletes that are just going to be super athletic and push your pace nonstop, like that's definitely going to be a sight for the people they definitely want to watch.
Yeah, for sure. Look, I want to talk about a little bit about your podcast. You started, when did you start that?
I want to say I've been on for about a month now. I have five episodes, maybe six posted, and have like another 3 saved that are going to be releasing every week. And it's fun, man. I've always enjoyed doing podcasts. You know, I've done a bunch because of jiu-jitsu. So I was like, you know, if I make the investment now, you know, I'm young. Maybe 5 years from now, you know, it could be something that's going to be paying my bills or even something bigger than that. So yeah. I invested my money wisely. I say, you know, I take a couple $1,000, get some high quality gear, get a setup. And I have such cool friends that we have awesome conversations all the time. It's like all we got to do is record it and post it, you know, and see how it goes. So
exactly.
That's pretty much how I see it. And I was like, all right, man, I'm going to just keep doing it. You know, I'll keep this on. And, you know, I really do think it's going to catch on. And I think people enjoy it. All the feedback I get is great. If you guys want to check it out, it's called Nicky Ride All Access. We're on Spotify, Apple podcast or on YouTube, and the links in my bio on Instagram, NickyRot247. So if you guys want to check it out, definitely take a look at it. You know, I have guys like Reese Humphrey on from NJRTC, RBY from Penn State, Gary Tonin, and a few other guys. And I'm going to have, you know, a ton more guys. I'm Gordon and Craig on soon as well. So yeah, it's going to be a fun podcast.
I did one with Craig a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, how was that?
Well, he was awesome. Craig is awesome. We had a, I think it was like the week after his match, that stupid match that happened.
Oh, yeah.
We talked a little bit about that. And but he was pretty cool. He's such a great guy.
Yeah, definitely. He's got a good personality. You know, I keep telling him, I was like, dude, you should do a podcast. You know, he always has something good to say and people always want to see it. So you never know, but yeah, I think the podcast is the way to go, man. It's kind of like your own little TV show, you know. You don't have
and there's no competition because we're like, listen, the content is there. Everybody can go and listen to. This is my target audience in Brazil, right? Because there's no such thing like we do here happening in Brazil. So you have like some radio guys doing podcasts, which is not a fucking podcast. They have like music playing in the background and they do the funny voice, you know, hey, Nicky Rod, man, what's up? That's fucking silly. That's actually what killed the fucking radio. Cause they're like, so that's not a real guy. You know, it's like a persona there. And, so I think I'm going to start doing something like this, just like this natural conversation. Sometimes I go through I did Jose Aldo. I got him to say a lot of shit that if I just did like a plain interview, he would never talk about that shit. If I say,
yeah,
hey,
people want to know who you are. You know?
Yes.
And it's not. And it's, I think sometimes going an interview can be a good way to do it. But sometimes just having a conversation with a friend is a much better way to kind of get a little bit of information out and see who this person really is and how they conduct themselves. And, you know, what interests them? Because naturally, when you're talking to somebody, their own perspective, their own interests are going to come out in the conversation if it's an authentic conversation. So I think that's the best way to do it.
I tell them all the time. I say, look, we're going to pretend we're just two friends having dinner. And then that's what the conversation, I say, I have zero questions to ask you. We're just going to sit down and talk shit. He's like, oh, okay. And then they relax. Right, they relax.
I literally do the same thing. They ask me, they're like, oh, do you have questions? I'm like, nah, bro, I just do it. You know?
Yeah, exactly. If I ask a question and you don't want to talk about it, we don't fucking talk about it. I don't care. You know, like with GSP, I was like, hey, is there anything you don't want me to ask? Because I also talk about that. Say, hey, if there's something you don't want us to talk about, we don't. Because I'd rather have you relax and like trusting the conversation, right? Because you don't want the guy to get like, oh shit, what is he gonna talk now? It's like, oh, he's gonna talk about that. I don't want to talk about this. We just don't talk. I said, well, I just want you to be to feel good about it, and we'll just have like a cool conversation. It's like, oh, okay. And people relax. You notice that too, right? They just like 10 minutes, it starts a little shaky because they try to get your pace, right? And you learning their pace, and then it just goes on from that. So say again, it's Nick Rod All Access.
Yep, Nicky Rod All Access. I have link in my bio on Instagram. My Instagram's Nicky Rod 247. YouTube at Nicky Rod All Access, and then the podcast is on Spotify, iTunes, and
everywhere, right?
Everywhere, yeah. All Nicky Rod All Access. Yeah. So check it out. It's fun, man. It's something I really enjoy. I think this is a way that to really, like I said, like let people know who I am, know what I'm about, and kind of let my personality out a little bit, you know, because typically all people see is the shirtless pics on Instagram, you know, so they don't really know who I am, you know, so it's a great way to for me to show people, you know, the another side of me that besides just the social media.
Cool. Just before we go, so just how is your training routine? Like how many times a day? What days? And you say you in North Bergen now?
Yeah, so I'm in North Bergen right now, which is like, I'm like 10 minutes outside of New York City.
Yeah, yeah.
It takes me, it's super close. So pretty much my schedule right now is I'll teach a private from like 8 to 9. Then I'll come back and, you know, eat some food. And then I have training at like 1 to like 4, 4:30, depending. And then either a private afterwards. And if I don't have a private.
This is every day?
Yeah, every day. Sure. And then I have a lift at nighttime. Okay. And then repeat. Yeah, that's it. So then the days that I don't do jiu-jitsu, I wrestle. So like I'll substitute usually once or twice a week instead of doing jiu-jitsu, I wrestle. Cool. Just to give me diversity in my training, and you know, it makes the mind think a little bit differently. We have different people and different athletes around you.
Cool, that'll be cool. Let's I have your contact now. Let's stay in touch. I'm gonna go. Joao is arriving here today. When you see him, you're gonna remember him too. So we're gonna go to the city like probably 3 or 4 times next week. And
okay,
then I'll text you, we'll bump into each other there. Maybe we'll do a private or something, we'll get some training going.
Yeah, sounds good, buddy. Definitely.
All right, dude. I know you're tight on time, so I'll let you go. Let's fucking do this again. Like, let's hope you get a super fight soon, and then maybe we'll do a breakdown of that here. We can do some stuff like that. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, sounds good, buddy. You got my number. Just shoot me a text. We'll hook it up.
Sounds good, man. Nicky Rod, appreciate the time, brother.
All right, anytime, bro. I'll talk to you later, man.
Thanks, man. See you.
Bye.